It is 9:06 on Monday, August 27th, 2012, first day of school. I think a couple of our council members went to schools and are be here in just a moment. I'll call the meeting to order at 9:06 a.m. Let us stand, and I will lead us in invocation. Ms. Medrano will do the pledge. Please bow your head. Our God, our Father, our heritage, our guide, our future. Help each of these council members and all of the City Hall and all that support City Hall as we try to make our city a city that is worthy of your love and your grace. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good. Ms. Rios.
Your first item is number one, a public hearing on the proposed 79.70 cents per $100 property tax rate for the 2012-2013 fiscal year. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak on the item? Are there any speakers? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
We'll need a motion to close.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you.
Your briefing continues.
Thank you. I asked Ms. Zoom to put a late agenda on the item, which was an update on what has happened in the last 2 weeks in regards to our mosquito control in West Nile, and I will let AC do that. I do want to tell you as City Council people that we'll get into the details, but what is non-controversial for me, because I've been firsthand in this thing, is the professionalism of AC and Joey Zapata. They were absolutely fabulous to work with and have been, and they were great with the state. The state was very complimentary of the professionalism of them, of their work, and at the county level. We got several comments of that. So there was a lot of late nights, and you guys worked around the clock. Frank Librio did a fabulous job as well, as he tried to kind of get the word out and all that. So I just want to say personally thank you on behalf of the citizens of Dallas, your work, a great example of our Hispanic leadership in this city, and even at the staff level. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. And as many of you know, the late nights were not too much of a problem, but the 6:15 morning meetings were a challenge. I think the other operative word that needs to be mentioned here is update. This challenge is by no means at an end. We are really in the beginning of this struggle against West Nile. We'll be talking more about how this next phase that we have for this battle as we finish out 2012, but it will continue more than likely the next few years. So with that, if you go to the next slide, I guess we've covered that in the following slide on three. I think we're pretty much all aware that West Nile is not to be fooled with. It is a disease that kills. It has killed. We are unfortunately in the spotlight because between Dallas County and the state of Texas having a quarter or half, depending on which measure you look at, of infections and deaths, this is not to be trifled with. It is passed on by infected mosquitoes. There was a very good article this weekend that tried to put some logic about how it was that this all happened in Dallas and in Fort Worth, in Texas, having to do with the weather, having to do with both wet in the spring, dryness that follows, bringing the birds over, having that, if you will, perfect storm that was a very bad storm for us in terms of illness and in death. The way that we're having to combat this is to reduce the mosquito population and then to keep those that are still around away from us. And you'll see that theme repeated over and over. Now, as I mentioned on the next slide, the Dallas County had 27% of the entire infections of the United States. That's rather staggering, actually. Half of them in Texas. And the infections, despite the aerial spraying, happened before the aerial spraying went and knocked out a bunch of the adult female mosquitoes. And so that infection rate and that death rate is going to continue for about 14 days after the last spraying. At the bottom of the slide, you see what the body count in terms of our human tragedy is at this time. Now, on the next slide, I think this is something that pretty much everybody is aware of. That is the when the first application, I think you went one too many. The first application was started on August 16th. We had not only to deal with, well, we had several factors to deal with. One, the state, the county, us, the cities, we're all making decisions about whether or not to spray, not spray, when to spray, what hours to spray. The weather added to that complication, all of which added to a situation where the change of plans were occurring literally hourly. But by the 19th, we had completed the whole of the city of Dallas. On the 20th, we were able to get a second application, and in each case, the applications were no earlier than 9 o'clock. Now, our challenge as a staff was to not only help make this happen, but try to make sure that our entire population was aware of this schedule, and as important, if not more important, how to continue to fight to kill mosquitoes on the ground with actions that they could take and how to protect themselves. And on the next slide, it gets into some of the very early results that we have seen from the trap so far. And again, I must stress, these are very preliminary. But the very preliminary results suggest that we are making headway, that we have been successful at this point. Joy has more detailed information about that, and you may wish to drill down into that particular part of it. But again, it is preliminary. The CDC, the federal government, the state government, are all on the ground as we speak, studying this issue to find out just what all the impact is, and also determine to what extent we still may need some more aerial spraying. In the interim, however, we're going to be continuing our ground attack on a number of fronts. Before we go on to the next topic of how we're moving forward, I want to just point out some of the things that happened in terms of trying to get the word out. And on the next slide, you see that, first of all, this was not a single department effort, certainly not a single individual's effort, but really was multi-departmental. Hundreds of our city staff were involved in getting the word out in a number of different areas. And it was no small part of that effort was from you all, using your contacts to help us get that word out with all the various people and organizations that you know about and have are connected up electronically with. But we had the fire department passing out information. We had about 60,000 informational brochures that were distributed. Police and code were out sticking in neighborhood signs. On the following slide, our media effort was a 24/7 operation. in literally 24/7, because not only was it hitting several times during the waking days, at night there were things that were going on in Twitter and the social media that all were having an ability for people to find out information no matter what time of day it was about what was going on. We also really used the reverse 911, which at first we really thought, maybe that really isn't going to work very well. We came up with some strategies, which I was hearing, hopefully you did, where a number of people were actually telling me they got a call.
Who got a call?
Okay, really? Well, and I got one, but there was a little special effort that was made to do that. But it was really, truly amazing about how that word got around and how impressed people were that they were actively being solicited to be given information. And they, because they were so impressed with it, were passing, telling that story, which is exactly what we wanted them to do. On the next slide, I think it was mentioned here at the previous meeting by one of our council members about using the digital boards, and sure, that was a great idea. We have that. The Clear Channel was very helpful in getting that up, getting it timely, getting it changed for us when it called for it, and they estimated there was about over 150,000 exposures that people saw throughout that time period. We also got, we went and got some radio ads, which are estimated in number of impressions was nearly 2 million impressions. On the next slide, there's the 17,000 contacts that we were making within, on a daily basis. Now that's not 17,000 individuals, that's 17,000 contacts into organizations that in some cases represented other thousands of other people in their email list. So as an example, one of that 17,000 were you all, that then you sent to your HOA. So that 17,000 was just the beginning of a, if you want to look at the multi-marketing scheme, if you will, when you look at that, the pyramid that is set out in motion to get the word out. Now, on the next slide, we also were having, as we were learning and as things were changing, having to make sure that if people were to call in, that they would be getting good and accurate information, which meant that Margaret and her team with 311 were continually having to be updated, retrained to make sure that they were going to be giving good information when called. We, of course, were pushing calls to their operations, and calls did come in. As you can see the numbers at the bottom, how those numbers started to increase dramatically over usage as it related to this topic. Now, the other slide, and one of the things that really helped to keep this on people's minds was in the following slide, the mayor's leadership. He and the county judge were having daily, often multiple, press conferences to give the update on what was going on with spring, but to also plug the 4D message that we were constantly trying to get out. And of course, they can attract cameras better than most. And so we had good coverage constantly throughout this period to keep the word out there with regards to what was needed to be done. In terms of the next phase, as I said at the outset, we are not at the end. Not at all. In fact, in some ways, this is the most critical component of it, because even though the spraying helped to knock adult mosquitoes out of the sky, out of the air, as far as those that were out, it did not impact any of the larvae that was in water. It did not kill the eggs that were in standing water. And the day after the spraying stopped, those larvae that were there in standing water began to hatch out, which is why it is absolutely so important that this next phase be successful. What we're looking to do, and as the chart there says, or the headings say, is that we're having to attack the draining of standing water. Again, a multi-discipline approach is in play. We've got a number of city departments that have been involved in helping to make sure that the word gets out. But now, more importantly, not just the word out, but their actions to help assist citizens in stamping out and dumping these waters, the standing water out. Now, that press conference was just a start, much like the other efforts that we talked about in terms of the spraying. We're going to continue those efforts. We have on the next slide. There have been, thanks to the news media, a number of featured stories that have pointed out the work of our city employees in a number of different areas in terms of enforcement of our code, the other efforts that we're making to modify our actions to stamp out or get water drained. The next slide. Though we have not increased our overall staff and code, now the focus of code inspection for the moment is this issue. Everybody in code and a number of other departments has been given this as a top priority. Joey and his crew have put on a very significant challenge to themselves of having a 24-hour turnaround for all the calls coming in on West Nile. That is extremely difficult when you look at all the calls we're pushing to 311. This weekend, they started out 700 calls behind. Over the weekend, they were out in force, got those calls down to 50, a much more manageable term. Hopefully, they're going to be able to keep up with it, but we're really taking on a very ambitious goal. The other thing that their code compliance is also doing is keeping up the neighborhood signs. There's about 1,300 that is being taken out, and our marshal's office is continuing enforcement on junk tires and also illegally dumped materials that has a tendency of gathering up water. On the next slide continues our efforts. We are going to be using 911 calls in the areas that are targeted for ground spraying. Now, the ground spraying, as I mentioned before, is going to be continued. And where it's going to be continued is any location that we have some indication that the West Nile is still there. If either through an inspection that we get an address on, if it shows up in a trap, we will take a radius of about a mile and start looking at doing the ground spraying, but also do the reverse 911 calls. We have our police officers that are helping us with identifying standing water. And our fire rescue officers, our firefighters, are helping citizens if they have any issues with regards to getting rid of their standing water, helping with that. And the electronic communication is continuing. Again, you all are an integral part of that. You have been very helpful, and we look forward to keeping that up with you all. Now, on the next slide, we want to make sure that the 311 is kept up to speed on all the efforts that we have going on. And for us to be used as, if you will, the effort of last resort. By that I mean is that we cannot, as a city, handle all the acreage that we have throughout the city in terms of standing water. We are imploring people to take as much of this as they possibly can by themselves with their own actions to dump over those little pots, look in their yards or be in their neighbors if the neighbors are gone on vacation or whatever. They need to be doing what they can to help in this situation. But if they need help by calling 311, we will work to give them that help. In summary, we have had an outbreak of a disease which is now demanding that we up our game. We have to be better than what we were before, because now the threat is more has grown for us. The actions that we have taken to date have been decisive, and at least in the early indications have been effective. But our efforts will continue, working with the county, working with the federal CDC and the state, to make sure that we first find out what has been the impact of all this up to now, and then to look at what might be needed to be done in the future. On our next steps slide, want to make sure that again we're working with the citizens on stamping out that water. As I mentioned, the truck mounted spraying will continue. We're going to be monitoring, continue our monitoring of the disease, as well as preparing for our next year's campaign. Because indeed, it looks, if there's any sort of similar weather pattern, now that we have so many birds that are now infected, that if we have another mosquito growth in population, we'll be facing this again next year. With that, I conclude my remarks. And again, Joey is here. We have a number of people throughout the both on both sides of the room associated with our department. Well, if you would just stand up real quick for all those, and this is just a very small sampling of the different individuals.
Thank you, AC. I will say two things, and we'll two other things, and then we'll get questions. One is the judge and I were on the phone with CDC, or I was on the phone. They were actually live meeting on Friday, and this is a very complicated quantitative and scientific exercise they are on. It looks like there will be a complete report, but it will be probably 60 days from now. It takes a while to get that. We've asked for an initial assessment, and today hopefully we'll get the exact date for that, but we were wanting that by the end of this week. That's where we're still on, right? So we talked about CDC. They're an important partner in this. They're going to be the science and kind of tell us what we did right, what we did wrong, how can we do better next time, and that's what they're doing. And the other thing I wanted to say was, our job is public safety, number one. Whoever gives you broadcast rights, FCC, thank you, I can't get my initials right. FCC says that public safety is also the key of our media. And I thought the media during this time is doing a very good job. Please, I ask you to keep talking about prevention in the media. And thank you. I just, too often we don't thank the media enough. And they've been a very important partner in this as well. So I appreciate that. With that said, we'll take questions. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mary. I also thank AC for bringing this briefing to us. It's very important to have a briefing like this on a very, very short notice. AC, I kind of stayed in contact with you during this situation. The main question I will have to you is, number one, is I believe in communication, and communication is the best policy. And I feel like sometimes that we did not have communication on a time like now. And Merrill, and maybe soon that, sometimes when we are not in control of the communication, who to give the communication to the city of Dallas, we are kind of like in second gear. And what I'm saying is, AC, I know the state was in charge, but sometimes we was not on the same timeline, on the same time zone with the state, because they knew what they were going to do, but we did not know what we were going to do, and we could not get the information out to the citizens on a time like now. Have you spoke to them, and is that communication is more on real time now, it's not on past time?
I think it got better as time went on. There was a number of factors that that complicated the situation, not least of which was weather, which was really disrupting a lot of folks, the planning efforts. But I believe as time went on, everybody was getting better at that communication in terms of getting the schedule out and being able to keep to that schedule, and then us being able to communicate that to everyone else. Unfortunately, we may have more practice at this over time, and I think we will get that even refined even further.
Right, and another thing that somebody, it's always about timing. We talk about public safety and something like this. You know, we learn from our mistake, but also the website. You know, when they got ready to be published, you could not know what particular area. You said Route 12 or the 20, but it was so vague that you really didn't know the destination in which what was there. When I asked my colleagues or some of my citizens to go to the web page and see what they're going to spray, they could not identify whatever it was. You know, so I hope we can have more clear, you know, on our web page for the people. I guess going forward, that I think since Davidson School District Day was the first day of school, I think we really need a partnership with the school today. And Mary, I know if you look at the television today, you know, some parents said, do you spray your kid with off before they go to school, go to class or not? So we need to know what do we do, what we do not do, because we have football season, you know, basketball season. We have so much activity outside. Especially with our youth, Pop Warner football, they are practicing at our park. And that's concerning to me also. I don't know how we're going to identify the park, because right now they are had cheerleaders and the little league football is practicing at our park. I guess, going forward, we have money in our erosion on our creek, you know, in our bond package. I hope that this will be something that we can identify in all the creeks, and at least have a map and say, this is where the trap was set this year, this is the trap to be scheduled next year. Speaking of those 91 traps, and identify those 56 traps inside the city of Dallas. Education is essential. I know your office is working on the HOA, Citywide Home Association. I think we need to make sure those are tied into our city base so we can get to those home associations, the home association get to the citizens and to the next door neighbors to get out of public information. I think that's a concern we need to make sure we can do that going forward. The trash attack, what Bronxville have been doing, is very important to keep our neighborhood force. And also, Ms. Caraway, you know, with Bullet Housing, you and Carol talking about abandoned houses, you know, we got to tear those down right now. Those are breeding deals, and I think we're doing a great job with that. But we could need to have communication. I guess what I take from here is communication on real time. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Ms. Davis.
Thank you. I have a couple of concerns. Julie, please. Julie and I was talking. I would like to have some of those West Nile virus signs. I know where to place them at in my neighborhood. I found some on some of the fair stuff, but they're so far off. And if you're reading, if you're driving, you know it's there, but sometimes if you're driving by, you'll pass it. And so if I can have about 20 or 30 signs, I'll put them out in my own neighborhood. It's almost like a campaign. When you do a campaign, you kind of, can we do banners as well, and we can place them? Because we do campaigns, we do the large banners, and we place them on different outlets in campaign mode. Can we do banners? Okay. And if we can, I would like to have about 3 or 4 banners. And it needs to be large banners that says, you know, whatever your message wants to say. So if I can get about 20 signs, I'm going to place them within the neighborhood. The other thing, the Ferguson area, we need to hit some key points off of Jim Miller, Ferguson, the four-way stop sign over there. Dumping. There is some areas that that have tires. I think people are beginning to dump the tires with the dumping. And so if we can get out and just make sure that we deal with all the dumping, that'll help. And in my area, I've seen dead birds. What do that mean?
We, dead birds should be reported to 311, and there are some specific types of birds in particular that I know are most susceptible to West Nile virus. I don't know them off the top of my head, but I will get that information for the council so we know exactly which are the kinds of birds that should be reported, and we'll pick them up and we'll test them.
Okay. The other thing, the code has those door hangers and the five things, the violation. Can we add standing water on the code door hanger as one of those things as a part, could be a part of the violation?
We can do that in the future version of it, and we have some that have blank space where we can write other and write some water, but that's a very good idea too.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Gregg.
Thank you, Mayor. You've done a great job, AC and Joey, on the education aspect of this, which I believe is most important. And I'm also curious where we are in this. I've gone to the CDC website, and you know, there's a bar graph up there showing how many cases per week. Do we have that type of data? Because it looks like in the state of Texas, the number of cases per week has dramatically dropped off, with the peak being the end of July.
We report that data to the county. Actually, the county gets our test results, and so they report up to the CDC. Yes.
So
and you're correct. The data, I mean, it is beginning to drop off. Seasonally, it would do that.
It looks like it dropped off from a peak in late July, the highest number of human cases. And we could get that type of information, or if I could, in part of these presentations, because I'm very curious where we are in this, because I think we've established, or the science has established, that this runs a bell curve, comes and goes. It seems like the curve peaked based on what's available at the CDC website. You're familiar with that bar graph they put up. You probably check it daily. That this peaked in late July and first week of August, a dramatic drop in this whole state of Texas. And then by the second week of August, just prior to our spring began, we were down to 23 cases in the whole state. It appears on the chart. And then third week of August, not many at all. So I'm curious where we are, and then in this process, what are your expectations? Do you think are we going to have like a double curve?
We can gather that data and provide that additional information. The best guidance we've had from the CDC to this point is that this could continue depending on weather and other factors through October.
So they're saying this could come back.
Yeah. One of the concerns that we all have is that we've been seeing warmer weather, which ordinarily, I mean, that's what translates into a longer period of time where you're going to have breeding of mosquitoes, and we know that the bird population that is infected is still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So the concern is whether or not we have a double dip, or a double increase, rather, of infection.
Well, that would be great if you have that data, if you could go ahead and get it to me, and then just include in future presentations the bell curve so we can see where we are, so we can see this impact of the education, which I know you mentioned a little bit of the impact of spraying. I'm very interested in the impact of the education from where that started, so we can see how many cases there were, and even comparing Dallas County having a graph for that versus the whole state, although it's not a perfect control to some extent. Spraying didn't occur throughout the state. So it's good to compare us to how we're doing in the entire state in that regard. I also think you've done a great job in trying to get the tennis shoes on the ground to fight to drain all the water sources. And I was wondering, what investigation have you done into the non-toxic solutions? So we heard from people like the Dirt Doctor and advertising those. What's been that effort? I didn't see that in this presentation about addressing the non-toxic.
For what we use,
yes.
The larvicide that we use includes two things. There's some junk tablets that, as we've understood, is bacteria that releases the toxin that affects only the mosquito larvae. So there's that, and then there's also the fish, the Gambusia fish.
Mm-hmm.
which we use as well. So, I mean, larvicide is primarily done, you know, using biological controls, dumping in water. It's always the best solution, too, if we're able to, with a small amount of water.
And then from a staffing perspective, I know that the city used to have an entomologist on staff. Do we have one now, too? And if this is going to come up every year, is it something that we're thinking about? If we're going to be battling West Nile every year, do we need an entomologist?
We do not have an entomologist position on staff. What we have are environmental specialists, which are our foot soldiers, if you will, that do the larvicide, treating the ponds, and do the spraying, have the pesticide application license for that, and do the trapping and collecting samples. So even though we had one employee that did have a degree, that is the position that we hired for is for environmental specialists.
Do you think that the skill set we're going to need in the future, if we're going to be facing this West Nile virus potentially every year and it's going to get worse, that we're going to need some in-house entomologists?
Well, as Joey said, we did have a person who happened to have a degree. Was not the manager, but was certainly a nice addition to our staff. We're working with the federal CDC and the state much closer on this. They're bringing top experts in this science to the table and working with us. So, you know, whether or not we need to have it for ourselves, you know, at this point we really don't know. Want to make sure that everybody understands, however, that the program that we've had in place when we had the entomologist with us is the same program that we're doing. But I think right now we're really fortunate that we're able to leverage in other experts that are looking at this throughout the country and able to gain advantage of their expertise.
Well, I'd certainly put it out there as something to consider, that we always want to have the right staff. And if this is going to be a problem we're going to face every year of this magnitude, perhaps having an in-house entomologist that could constantly want to review our programs. And I know for the future we're going to look at getting the education out there earlier and then looking at how to get the heat out there, looking at how to get the various kind of big discs that you drop in the dunk, how we get those out there. That can really help quite a bit.
There's absolutely no question that the best biological effort that we can have is have humans dump water. That's the most effective biological strategy that we have.
And that goes back to, if you get bitten by a mosquito, where does the mosquito likely emerge? Is it 1,000 feet close by? They don't travel across town even. They're very local.
They like anybody else, is going to be looking for the easiest target. So if they don't have to fly, they won't. And their first attack actually is birds. That is their preferred meal.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not around, then they'll look for others, including us.
And then also too, probably a program too, is to encourage people to check their screens. Because a lot of people are actually getting bitten inside their house or something. Keeping your screen doors, watching your doors, your windows, watching when you let your pets in, because that's the time that the mosquitoes can come in and eat.
Having killed one this morning, myself, my kitchen.
Killed one.
Very sensitive to that issue. Yes, and we don't have those issues, but they get in.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to be ever vigilant about making sure that we kill as many as we possibly can.
Well, I'd certainly encourage the education, more of it, and have it earlier. And then also consider whether in the future we do need an entomologist on staff, if this is going to be rise to the level of an emergency declaration. And then three, certainly having the data, what we know from the CDC now, so we can see where we are in this and how our education measures have done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And I'm glad to know that the mosquitoes are not flavor conscious.
Apparently, they take on sweet pieces.
Good. Let me ask just a couple things. One of the most important things I want to know about our code enforcement officers and all the folks that are out in the field. What type of protection are we dealing with them while they're on the attack on the ground, lifting up tires, looking and identifying, and out there? What's happening with our employees?
Well, we urge all of our employees, Councilman Carraway, we urge them all to use whatever protection, including the DEET repellents, and take, you know, and also to avoid, you know, apart from when they're doing the work of actually, you know, checking the water, to avoid, you know, circumstances where they can come in contact with the mosquitoes.
Yeah,
that goes for all employees.
We have enough for all of them to spray when they're out there.
We're going to make sure that we do as the season continues.
All right. And what is the long? We do have a long-range plan in effect for next mosquito season, but and as we move forward.
Mr. Carraway, before we do a lot of long-range planning that we put into concrete, we need to get the CDC's reports back and see what they say. So we'll be back with y'all about a little more long-range planning that might be out of the scope of what we're doing right now, if there is any. But we really need to see their work first, and they're doing that analysis during this week.
Is it safe for us to kind of budget-wise consider something over in the side just in case?
No, you don't need to. You always have contingency and emergency reserves. I don't think this would be very expensive considering what we need to do. Additionally, the state has helped us, so I think we're okay budget-wise.
Okay. And did we get any complaints about the spraying that affected people? It burned my eyes, it did this, those types of complaints.
I was not made aware of any of those. Now, there were people that expressed concerns, but none that had any specific negative interaction that I've been made aware of.
Yeah, and I think that's important because, one, all of the complaints and the perceptions going into this, I think we need to measure the outcome of it, and then the next time that we move, that should help us minimize when the mayor has to make a decision about a spraying. Did the spraying have an effect? Did it hurt somebody? If it didn't, then, you know, we went through an exercise of alerting the community that something was so dangerous that it ended up not being as dangerous as it was laid out to be. I think that's something for us to take advantage of now to kind of run that trap to see exactly where we are. Let me just ask one other thing, and Mayor, I'm kind of threw a little monkey ranch in here this morning, and Rosa, I'm going to throw a little monkey ranch and give you a little advance warning. Would it help, because you mentioned in this about 311, and would additional operators help us with 311? Do we need some additional operators?
At this point, we
not just with West Nile. I mean, just with 311 overall.
I understand. And right now, we are not experiencing a situation that requires more personnel. Now, the budget included some additional technology that will help enhance and also make more efficient their work. So I think at this point they are focused on having those technology improvements brought online to see how we can continue providing that service.
All right, and then Mayor, when we talk, and Rosa, and Mayor, I have a suggestion about 311, because people, you know, when they dial 311 for mosquitoes or whatever the case is, we expect to get a live person, and I was just wondering.
Just like any call answering service, you're not always going to get a live person.
But would one or two more people help us?
You know, you can always add one or two more people, but you have a budget to balance with everything else you're spending. So we try to balance that with improvements in technology, and, you know, you could add a unlimited number of people to 311, but we kind of have to balance where do we have the technology to deal with it when it peaks? Do we have enough people? And as AC said, I think we're okay for right now.
So how much is one person? To add one person?
Probably 70,000 or 80,000.
About 70,000? 70. How much does this person make that's counting off 15 of us lunch hours? Is where I'm really going with this. Because, you know, you count 15 of us every time we go to the bathroom or go to lunch and walk out the door, and we have 1.2 million people that can get another person. I hate to throw y'all on the bus like that today, but 311 is something I've been dealing with, and I'm trying to figure out how we can get more for the money. And
Mr. Carraway, we'll be talking about the budget in a minute, but during the amendment meeting, you know, if you need to bring up something like that, that'd be the appropriate time.
Put it on.
Okay.
Bring it up.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Of course, to the staff, in particular, those that were out in the field, we thank you so very much. My concern right now is the special need and the senior citizens that perhaps have not been in their backyard for maybe a few months. How do we help them in terms of if they've got either tires or maybe buckets or pails, in their backyard? How do we help them?
Well, again, our effort is to try to help those that, for whatever the reason, may not be able to help themselves. We keep pushing to try to get people to go out there and do things for themselves. But if in that particular case, they call 311, we're going to have somebody go and respond, and to, if needed, go help them make that happen.
I think that's very good. I know this weekend we were at the homeowners boot camp, association boot camp, and I know the information was passed there and through our town hall meetings as well. I think slide 18 would be a great educational piece because sometimes people don't realize. I didn't realize that one of my brothers had changed the tire and left it in the backyard, and then I went to check, and there it was. So I think that maybe a constant reminder of that we might have a wagon or might have a pail or something outside that could retain some water that could turn it over. So I think that's a good piece. I want to thank in particular Univision and Telemundo. They were absolutely great partners even before they interviewed Ms. Hasso or Ms. Alonso. They were doing a great job even before we were asked to go to their studio. So I want to thank them in particular because they really helped us out a whole lot in our community. And, of course, to the mayor and to the judge, did a great job. But my hat's off to Zachary Thompson, our health director, our Dallas County health director. He was right there along with AC and with you, Joey. So my hat's off to him. He continues to do that. I saw him all weekend, preaching to the choir, I guess, to make sure that we were draining all types of water. So I think, in essence, it's just a good partnership with the City of Dallas and Dallas County. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Medrano. To the birthday girl, Ms. Margolin. It's her birthday today. We celebrated last week.
Thank you. It's a good day. Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to get some more information about the spraying and the process that was used prior to the aerial spraying when we were doing the truck spraying, because I had some extremely frustrated neighborhoods who wanted to be sprayed. A couple of them are along creeks. One of them, the Caruth neighborhood, is right adjacent to University Park, where there were a number of cases. There is an area that had three, I guess one death and two cases of West Nile virus in the Windsor Park area, and they were asking me, how can I get sprayed? And it was like hitting my head against a wall. I didn't know who to talk to. I tried code. I tried calling the county judge, and I got no response, and so I had nothing to bring back to my communities, and they thought I was ignoring them. So what do you recommend?
Well, I'll tell you about the process that we used for spraying the areas by truck, and that is we follow the state and the federal government's guidance and spray areas where we have positive traps.
How was the determination made of where the traps were placed?
We've had these areas, about 90 areas in the city, mapped out where historically we know we have low areas, standing water, ditches, and streams. And part of the exercise we're going to go through with the CDC as we wrap up this year's outbreak is ensuring that we've got the best use of our traps.
Where does the number 90 come from?
Just again, there's not a fixed number. It's just a number that over the past few years we know we have had
one of my neighborhoods is 3 miles from a trap, and so nothing was found there, and so they felt like they were ignored, and so I mean, is the answer that there really is nothing that as a council member I can do to influence the process or where the spraying happens?
No, that's not the answer. And this entire process means that we need to look again, and we may be doing it right, but when we get the CDC information back, we're going to ask them to look at the sites, we're going to ask them to look at the number of the traps, we're going to ask them to look at our methodology, and I think we need to spend some time talking to you and the areas and putting them on the map and identifying what the concerns are so that we can make you comfortable that we're covering that area and you can in turn make them comfortable. So we'll commit to doing that, and I'm sorry if we've had a shortcoming during this episode, but again, we're going to take time to learn to do it more thoroughly as we deal with this in the future.
Well, I would really appreciate that, because
yeah,
this is one of the most frustrating experiences I've had since I've been on the council.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I want to say I think we've done a magnificent job of getting the word out about the standing water. I think everybody is aware of that now. So I think the city's efforts, the county's efforts, the media's efforts have been outstanding. Now, following up on that, since we've got everybody's attention about standing water, I had a neighborhood call me Friday, and I went out there on Saturday, and apparently a water main had broken. And of course, they're thinking about West Nile because there's like 4 inches of water in the street. So what they did is they called 311 and got a truly cranky lady on the phone who apparently was having a really bad day, so therefore my neighborhood guy wound up having a really bad day. And she never bothered submitting his request for somebody to come out and do a fix on the water leak. So he waited 2 days. Nobody came out. This was over a weekend. He called again and got a terrific 311 lady. So I just wanted to point out that again, and still and yet, we have inconsistent 311 service. At my town hall meetings, I asked about 311, and it's just really interesting. I get this total division in the room. Everybody's either had a great experience or they've had a terrible experience. There's kind of no in between. And this, to me, this situation illustrated that perfectly. They get a lady who never even bothered submitting his request, and then the next time they call, they get a tremendously good lady. But that said, it took water utilities 3 days to get out there and look at this leak. Meanwhile, the street is full of water, and these people are thinking, how come nobody's responding to this in the city when they're doing this huge outreach effort about getting standing water cleared up? So, in reading this briefing and in hearing you all today, one thing I learned that I didn't know before is that apparently in this briefing you're telling us it really has to stand there for a week before we have to start worrying about it. But I don't think that that message has gotten out to most people, because everything says drain standing water. That's pretty much all it says. And while that's a significant message, everybody's concerned so that when we don't respond for 5 days or so, then the neighborhood's beside themselves saying, you know, okay, not only do we have all of this water standing in the street, but it could be breeding mosquitoes. So, you know, it's just frustrating to me that we keep having these problems with 311, and I know that you all have said that that new software and the training is going to help. Please, we've got to get on top of 311 so that we have a more consistent level of service. And people aren't getting a kind of a just, you know, whatever happens when they call, they never know whether it's going to be good or bad. And then I'll talk more about the water response when the water briefing comes up next. I wanted to ask where the billboards were, the electronic billboards. Do you know where they were?
I'm not sure we had it on this briefing. I know we've had it, the locations on some other materials, but... We can send that to you.
Just let me know, please. Send me that information.
Sure. We have 10 electronic billboard locations. We can get those.
Okay. And the other thing I was wondering is, would it be possible to get a map of where these 90 traps are currently?
Yes.
Because I have no idea where they are. And so I think that would be really helpful.
We can get that to you.
Okay. Ms. Margolin had some frustration with the ground spraying, the truck spraying, and you know, AC, that I had some frustration with trying to find out about the aerial spraying. And I want to thank you for all your efforts that you made to help me get an answer on that, one way or the other. Also, Ms. Davis had a question or asking a request about banners. Seems to me, Joey, that didn't you tell us recently the city prohibits banners?
Yes, ma'am. They are, but now for governmental purposes, for and we're now announcing that we've got an outbreak we've got to deal with. You know, we'll consider where we're putting them. We're not going to put them just anywhere, but we're putting up our signs in our right of way right now because it's so important that we get the message out.
No, I understand that, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but I'm just saying that we get criticized all the time for not following our own rules. And so I just had a question about the banners, because you just recently said no banners are allowed. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about those plastic banners that, you know, are draped. You mean like those 4x4 big poster signs? Okay, those, yeah. Okay, I don't call those banners, so I got mixed up as to what you were referring to.
And my response was we're going to look into it. There's nothing that is absolutely simple to get done, so looking into it.
You're right, nothing is simple.
It's going to take some looking and making sure that it's compliant with as many of the laws that we possibly can. But obviously, we're in a emergency situation, so we're making accommodations along those lines. And I wanted to add some point. The request that Ms. Davis made with regards to the placards for her area,
mm-hmm.
if there's anybody else that would like to also have a supply that you can get them out to where you believe are the best locations in your district, please just request those for Joy's office, and we'll see about getting those out to you.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you very much for the information. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Mr. Cadena.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, AC and Joey, for all your hard work on this. I know it's been very difficult, and for your continual work on it. I had a couple of questions, and they've been partially answered. One was on the health of the human health of the spraying, which you said you've gotten really nothing back on that. I'm wondering what you've gotten back on the spraying that has it affected our good insects and animals, such as bees, butterflies. Have you heard anything on this effect?
Neither situations which were the biggest concerns expressed before spraying having to do with human health and the good insects, we have not really heard of any particular situation that they saw either, you know, dead bees or whatever out there. That has not been the case.
Okay, and also, and I think Mr. Grayson asked a question on the non-toxic spraying, and I'd asked that last time we were spraying, and I think I was told that it's too late in the day to do the non-toxic spraying. Can we do the non-toxic preventive spraying in the future to where we don't have to do the toxic spraying? In an earlier stage,
we're using a number of non-toxic strategies: the fish, the microbes, and that's in the stagnant water.
Mm-hmm.
As far as non-toxic spraying, I'm not sure. The spraying is all the pesticide. It's not the more organic or biological solutions.
Can we do that in the future? Can we do the organic biological solutions in the future?
The answer is yes, but it's not a spray strategy. It is a putting it out in stagnant water situation. What we are using biological efforts in is to kill the larvae and the eggs in stagnant water, and that's where you use the biological attack.
So, but where I'm going with this is it's like it's we're too late in the game once we start doing something. Aren't there preventatives that we can do that it doesn't ever get to this point? And one of them is putting up bathhouses. I'd like to hear what happened at White Rock Lake, the immediate White Rock Lake area, because we've got bathhouses out there. And I'm thinking if we get in our most prolific areas of the mosquitoes and put bathhouses around, it may help to deter some of it.
Right. No question. And I, the earlier comments we talked about having to map out our strategy for next summer mm-hmm. goes along exactly what you're talking about. We're wanting, and actually on Councilmember Margolin's point about the testing, we're looking at everything of using the expertise of the mm-hmm. federal government and state that is now focused on us. We're just asking all those kinds of questions as to whether our testing is what it needs to be, how mm-hmm. it can be improved, but more importantly, how can we get in front of it for next summer? And
right.
and those very things that you're mentioning are on the table to be discussed
right.
and hopefully implemented in the most appropriate
now.
Way.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it's now or be in the spring or just when the
yeah.
timing.
Yeah, whenever necessary
yes.
to
right.
stop it before it gets started.
Yes.
Thank you all so much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hassel.
Thank you, Mayor. Looks like a lot of my questions have already been answered, but again, I want to thank Joey and AC. You've done a great job. Every time I asked for something to be translated into Spanish, I was able to get it on a timely basis, so thank you so much. It certainly helped when I was on CNN Espanol. One morning at 7:15, I got up early to do that. But again, we were able to give the message on the 3 D's in Spanish. I was able to do that, and thank you for that. I think we need to continue with that same message to our constituents. In terms of the question about what can we tell our constituents today in terms of the results, what I'm hearing is that we'll get an initial assessment from CDC by Friday. Is that right, Mayor?
Yes, well, that's what I've asked for.
Well, okay.
They haven't promised it yet, but that's what I've asked.
So if you're listening out there and you want to know what happened after the aerial spraying, we should be getting some data and information, hopefully by the end of the week. Again, I think the message of the 3Ds has got to continue. And then if we're talking about possibly birds being infested, we should start preparing some sort of message. Just like Ms. Davis wanted to know what does it mean when she sees dead birds. That's already happening, so we need to prepare our message for the bird situation. So we go from mosquitoes to birds. and that was in Jeff. Okay. The last thing is 311. I mean, I know Mr. Caraway sort of took away and asked the questions that I'm concerned with, and Ms. Grayson the same thing. We've got to do better with 311. That's where you're telling everybody to call. We're telling our constituents to call. We've got to do a better job, period. And if there's someone in 311 who doesn't want to be there and doesn't want to answer these calls, as minimal as they might be or as dumb as they might sound, because I have those same dumb questions, they better be responding to our constituents in a respectful, intelligent way. Those 311 callers are who we are directing our citizens to, and they better do a better job. That's pretty much everything I have. I think thank you to the marshals for going to the tire shop. We had a big spout of rain yesterday, at least in my area we did. So those visits have to continue, because the rain came back and there's more standing water. So we've got to be very, very aware that we've got to go back around and do the same thing and not just leave it for once and that's it. So I look forward to the tire shops being made aware to dump their water again and someone going back to talk to them. And also 311, because I'm directing all my constituents to call 311 when they need help. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hassel. Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, ma'am. A couple of questions about the signage. in just communication in general. On the signs, especially on the video boards, I think Sandy asked about the locations. I would like to see that map as well, but more than that, I think we have probably 10 of these video boards alone in downtown Dallas. And we have so many people from around Dallas County who work in downtown Dallas. Are there boards that we're using in downtown, and if so, are we using all of them? Because we should.
I don't have the locations handy, but we can verify, and we are asking to use as much as we can.
Okay, I want to do more than just verify. I want to make sure that we're utilizing our PSA options with regards to these video boards, because we put a very particular requirement, especially in the downtown boards, and I remember around the city that we were had the option to put up PSAs. And don't we have more than, well, here's what I want to get. I want to get what's our universe and location of these video boards, which ones are we using? Because right. If we're only using 10, that's not all of them. We should be using all of them,
yes.
Especially downtown.
And that was our desire was to do exactly what you said. I just didn't hear the downtown specifically as if whether or not they were running them. I'll need to check on that. But it was our intent as well to see about getting all that we were supposed to be getting.
It's just because it's such a major area employment center, it makes sense that we can reach out to beyond even the city of Dallas. We can reach out to folks in other parts of the county to address the issue. I have not seen these signs about drain standing water. I haven't seen many of those in East Dallas. So are we making sure that, are we putting these out?
We've got more of those on order. We started out with, we have three kinds of signs out right now. We started out with the spraying signs, and then we started making some of the 4D signs. I think we had like 250 of the spraying signs, but it's not that one up there. And then we had about 300 of the 4D signs, and then we got 1,300 of those signs, which we thought was more the primary message right now after all the rain to drain standing water. But we're ordering more of all of those. But if you're seeing fewer of the 4Ds, it's because we just have fewer of those on hand. But we're getting more.
Okay, and the signs that say West Nile virus spraying is scheduled, are those picked up after the spraying is done?
Yes.
Okay.
We recycle those and reuse them in areas where we're going to spray next.
Because there's one on Stillman around Monticello that's been up for a while.
If it was missed, let us know and we'll see about getting picked up. But we were picking them up and moving them from as the spraying was continuing. So they were supposed to. We were reusing the ones that we had produced. Again, if we missed one. Just let us know. We'll go pick it up.
And are those, I think it would be more helpful or informative if it said tonight or, when is the aerial spraying supposed to take place and the hours and, something along those lines.
We post those signs 48 hours in advance. It's been our policy. So we don't really specify the date, but we do want them to be eye-catching so that people realize something's happening in this area that I'm in right now. And here's the phone number where you call. And then the phone number has a recorded message that describes the boundaries. You can go online and see the boundaries also on a map there.
I think just being realistic, I don't think a large percentage of people actually follow through and do that. I think they see the sign and they think they're spraying. When's the spraying? Is it tonight? Do I need to get my pets in tonight? Do I need to avoid being out between 10 and 3? I think that we just want to think about that. I'm just suggesting that it could be more informative.
Well, obviously we were kind of, the balance was how do you get it eye-catching and then also informative. And so anyway, there's more work that we can be doing on that, and we will.
And on that end, let's talk about two things. One is the CDC response that we're going to get, kind of evaluating the health aspect of the measures we've taken. I was interested in the 90 traps that we have. Have we overlaid the 90, because this seems like a pretty basic thing to do, have we overlaid the 90 traps that we have with the West Nile outbreak, with the locations of the disease?
We have 90 trap sites, and we move our traps around them, and that is exactly the data that we recently turned over to the CDC so they can help us.
Okay, so they're going to be letting us know if there's a correlation. I just want to make sure, like Ms. Margolin said, are we putting our traps in the right locations? You said they're mobile. How often do we move them?
We pick them up every Tuesday and Thursday for samples, so they're moving around about twice a week at least.
Okay, and we're evaluating whether we need more of these traps?
Absolutely.
And that's part. When do we get, what's the timeline on the CDC evaluation?
The final report, according to the information that I saw, was due by early November. That's the final report. They're giving us preliminary information all along, but the final recommendations, they should be wrapped up by early November.
And are we developing and have we, stepping back just a second, we're in an emergent situation, I understand that, and the mayor has utilized his emergency powers to address aerial spraying, and as well as the county and addressing aerial spraying. There's been a lot of public conversation about it, and what I'm wondering is, rather than wait until next year and allow us to get towards the end of the cycle, end of the bell curve for the mosquito life cycle and mosquito season, what are we specifically doing to get ahead of this?
The work is beginning with having the CDC here and the state focus on our current efforts. The next phase of their efforts here is to answer that question. We know that this is not going away. We know that a repeat of the weather conditions and all that, that if it were to happen again this coming summer, we'd have a repeat. So the question is being posed to them, what are the things, exactly what you just asked, what are the things that we can be doing to prepare and get ahead of that cycle come next summer?
And to that end, are we developing triggers? In other words, are we developing a planned response for different types of situations, whether it's, you know, an outbreak around creeks, how would we respond in that case? Or there's a global outbreak throughout Dallas County, that may be a different response. Are we talking about how we address different issues in different ways?
Yes.
At different parts of the season?
Yes.
Okay, my last question is this. This to me seems to take a lot of strategic thinking and a lot of intergovernmental agreement and partnership. What type of organizational structure have we set up that will allow us to partner with the county and with the member cities of Dallas County so that we have a regional response? We might not always agree with the regional response. In Dallas, we may do things a little differently, and other cities may do the same. But at the same time, I feel like we've caught a little bit unprepared here. And you guys have done an exceptional job, particularly in regards to education. We don't want that to happen next year. So what structurally do we create, and what type of timeline do we create for an actual work product of this intergovernmental task force, perhaps, so that we have a plan? It's a written plan. It's not an emergent plan. So talk to me about the plan for our preparation for next year and the organization of it.
The current structure that's in place involves the offices of emergency management of all the cities that throughout the county. And in that organization, they meet fairly regularly to look at a number of different issues that would be facing the county in terms of emergencies. And so that is the organization that has been in place. Now, this particular disease reaction that we had is really kind of challenging some of that structure and how that fits in with the medical community as well as with the county structure, et cetera, which there's going to be a critique of all of what you just mentioned with the emergency management offices and with the health department of the county and others to see just what adjustments need to be made in order to address those things that you've laid out. So what we're doing is having the expertise of the federal government, the state, as we find out what we're doing right now and how we can better prepare for the future, put into the thought process and the structure that's already in place and see what recommendations for changes will come out of that. And that, again, as Joy mentioned, that'll be in November, we think.
Ms. Hunt, we have a fairly strong, the system that AC says is fairly strong and fairly documented. Every time we have it is how we respond to emergencies, and we do desktops and that sort of thing. every time we have an emergency, we need to go back and look and see in this particular circumstance what could we have done better, and is there a place we could strengthen that. One thing I want to do fairly soon is talk to y'all about your roles in those times of emergency, and a little more information, because I think where we have a weakness, if we have one, is y'all's knowledge of those systems and your role in those systems. So I think that's something that we need to work on. When emergencies come up, they're never clean or tidy, and you hope you can handle them as responsibly and well as you can, but you are responsible to go back and look and see how you can do it better. But our emergency system, staff-wise, that come have a pretty good documentation and follow very well, but I would like to talk about the process of emergencies and the first 24 hours and all those kind of things with y'all shortly, too, so we'll work on that.
And I think it would be helpful to talk about exactly what you're talking about, Mary, emergency issues and how policymakers may be part of it, but more specifically to this situation. I think it would be very beneficial for our mayor and the judge of Dallas County to discuss an intergovernmental task force. This, and I appreciate that we have the Office of Emergency Management dealing with this. We know this is an emergency that we're going to be dealing with next summer and perhaps summers after that. So we know when it's going to happen. You know, if someone tells you, we know when the hurricane's going to hit, and we have about 8 months. And so let's plan for it. I think we need to work more closely. I think we need to have policymakers as part of that, as Mary said. But I really, at this point, don't feel comfortable that beyond the November dates that you guys are talking about, that we have set up a timeline of when we plan to have our plan for preparation for next summer set. I would feel more comfortable if we had that and if we made it, you know, a date in January to have at least preliminary steps that we've listed out, prepared, and organizational structure set out.
Let me say something, because there's no question that the judge and I have talked about this already, and it was planned to do. So thank you for agreeing with that. And we will, look, we're not going to get into the spring and not have our act together on this. We've got some of the best and smartest people, and understanding how the county, we work with the county, since we outsource our health resources to them, our health needs, making sure that we do an assessment not only of this issue, but the process and how we optimize that. And that's exactly what we've talked about, so thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen.
Without question, AC, Joey, y'all, the staff have just done a tremendous job. Tremendous job. Y'all were thrown basically into the fire, said go put it out, and then you had to work with other government groups. And I use the word other government groups. You weren't the lead guy. You had to follow them, and you got counsel. My district, I didn't know anything about it. I feel kind of protective of my people. You know, I don't know what's going on, and I'm calling you up. And it's like, man, you're going to spray tonight. What are you going to do? You're going to spray. How am I going to tell my people? How am I going to notify them? Where's my 60,000 signs and all this? How am I going to tell them? I got kids out there. Y'all going to spray it? I thought you said it's 10 o'clock. Now it's 9 o'clock. Oh, man, how am I going to tell my kids? Who's going to tell them when the plane comes over, do not look up? Do not look up. Go inside, you know? And those were all, we don't know if we're going to spray or not. It was, you did a yeoman's job. I cannot say enough thanks for trying to communicate to our people that are out there. You know, the signs were good once they finally got out, because again, we were told one morning, red alert, and then we're going to spray. Well, you're not going to get these signs out. You're not going to notify these folks. You got, what, 39% of our citizens we know are asset poor. They're not going to read these signs. You know, they're not going to read the newspaper. And I got kids again that are out there. You know, they don't maybe have air conditioning. They're outside at 9 o'clock. And so Yeoman's job being thrown into this fire pit. Go to slide 20. That very last summary, that very last statement, if we go forward on this, that last one, Dallas is working with the federal government, the state, and the county to assess its response and improve its mosquito control program. I would love to see that word even Dallas City Council, because again, I got 100,000 people, and I guarantee you the CDC and the state of Texas and to some degree the county have no clue what's going on at Forest and Aldea. They have no clue the number of people that are out walking at 9 o'clock, not to get physical exercise, but to go get groceries or coming home from work. They have no clue whatsoever. They have no clue about Whitehurst and Royal. They have no clue about Walnut Hill and Plano. They have no clue about Five Points and what these people are out doing, and they're spraying this stuff on them. So I think the city council very much needs to be involved in these discussions as we go forward. And more important than that, we hear from our police chief, who does a tremendous job. What did he talk about? He says, if you see something, say something. What that basically means is we've got a group out there, say in Dallas, 1.2 million people. They got 1.2 million eyes, 2.4, I guess, million eyes that can see crime and report it and help us live in a safer place. If we ever got the citizens behind us, instead of giving them a false sense of security that we sprayed and you're okay now, don't worry about it. Well, you saw your mosquitoes. You know, I saw them. I just saw them myself. That's a false sense of security. And it seems to me to some degree, that these citizens that came down and voiced their opinions that the very day that we did this are now alienated. The ones that they were out there working to save their beehives, working to do that. Those are the citizens that we have to bring back into the fold, because they're the ones that are ultimately going to get this message out. Otherwise, it's just going to be the same story year after year. Red alert, call in the federal government, spray it, because it's, you know, it's easy to get along. You can say it's the government thing. That's just, again, we have to do a better job at the local level. At the local level. That's the one that takes care of us, is the local people, not the federal guys and stuff, because they just got a book and they don't know a thing about my people. So, but I'll sum it all up again. Man, thank you guys, because I was on the phone with you quite often. Tell me what's going on. And you were straight up with me, so I appreciate you so much. Thank you, you and your staff, for your professionalism.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mrs. Coop.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to echo a couple of things that have been said. To Ms. Margolin's point, we border that area that was had some infections and some deaths, and I had the same reaction. It was difficult to get the education out. It was difficult because folks wanted to be sprayed. I expressed that to the manager as well, and she tried to get us, you know, as much information as she could. But I think next year, if we can be prepared just to answer questions early on, I think that would just go a long way with the public. AC, on the emails that you sent us, but then later it progressed into an email, into a press release type email. It was a little bit, just lessons learned, okay, a little bit confusing to the citizens. It's going to be 9 o'clock tonight. No, it's not. You know, press release type email probably would serve us better. So they were consistent. They came with a consistent banner and that kind of thing. When we get out these emails, no matter how many emails are on our list, our homeowner presidents then in turn send it to their email list. So by the time they got them and then they sent them out, you can see what kind of the progression perhaps wasn't there for another 24 hours. So just a consistent banner and everything, I think that would be very helpful. And time of day and on there that actually that the press release was actually given would be helpful.
Good observation. And obviously we were kind of struggling both with form and content.
Yeah,
But point well taken.
Yeah. Just a couple of suggestions. I don't know if we asked Dart to put it on their message boards, and did we? Okay, good, excellent.
Yes.
And then our kiosks that are located throughout the city. That's a little bit different deal, but maybe for the education purposes next year. They do have PSAs on those, PSA print pieces on those kiosks.
Coming in front of it next year, we'll have more of those opportunities. We also have the school districts that will be able to...
Yes, they're going to be great.
Yeah, we're going to be able to use them much more effectively than we would with school out.
Right. Flyers going home and so on and so forth. I do want to address what Ms. Hunt said, because I thought that was a slight weakness too, or a weakness in our system. The region and the Council of Governments has this emergency preparedness plan for the entire region. And whether it's police related or weather related, or weather related emergency preparedness, just unbelievable. I mean, really quite remarkable. Some education on that, manager, maybe at the beginning of next year would be helpful, so that we understand how we react and relate to the rest of the region and what they perhaps are going to be doing, how they're trained,
yes,
where they're trained. I mean, there's a whole methodology that goes on to the emergency preparedness in the region. This health emergency preparedness has been something that is contemplated at the regional level. But West Nile, in the recent memory, has not, that type of plan requires its own distinct imprint and footprint. And I don't know that, I saw that as a weakness in the region. And others talk about it, elected officials among the region, constantly when we see one another. You know, what did y'all do? How did you do it? Did you do it by county? And that kind of thing. That's elected officials, elected city council members, because they're the first line that gets the calls and things like that. So we were trading information just as we saw one another several, you know, one or two times a week. But I didn't see a coordinated effort. I'm sure there was, because I'm sure you said that. But we just need to know what that is and how that works. Okay? I think that would be very helpful to everybody. And they were looking to the city of Dallas and to Dallas County, because it was here that it happened, as to what kind of measures did you take. So that was occurring as well. And I don't know if others had that experience, but I do think we do need to have that. Not only for this purpose, but for all emergency preparedness purposes that come up. And again, Mayor, the weather-related ones, as far as tornadoes and stuff like that, really is quite remarkable. So it would be helpful that everybody understand that, so that they'll know, if that ever does happen, what their responsibility is as a council member. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. Something else I wanted to mention is the swimming pools in foreclosed houses. We're having a greater and greater problem in my district, I know. I don't know about other districts, but these foreclosed houses with these swimming pools that sit there for weeks or months, and the neighbors are worried because those pools are absolute breeding areas for this West Nile. I mean, I've had one on King's Hollow. I talked to you about it, Joey, that sat there for 3 weeks. I don't know what we've done. You were going to get back to me, so I'm looking forward to that.
It was taken care of, but I want to go back to the point. Your neighbors should be concerned about it, and in that concern, they should report it so that we can take some action.
I had been under the impression, and the policy may have changed, but when I was here before, it seemed to me that stagnant swimming pools were treated within 24 hours, especially if there was an unlocked gate or some kind of entry that would cause it to be hazardous for children, not just the mosquitoes, but, you know, somebody falling in there. I mean, these pools are green and black, and they're hideous. And so I'm very concerned that our response, especially during a West Nile season, has not been as quick as one would hope it would be. So I'd like to see us take a look at how we have a quicker response when we have these stagnant swimming pools and these foreclosed houses. I understand sometimes gaining entry is a problem. So what do we do if we can't gain entry?
We will get a search warrant from municipal court. Within hours, depends on the time of day. If it's late in the day, it'll be the next morning. But we get a search warrant so that we can go into the property and treat it. The one in question that we discussed late last week was treated a couple of weeks ago, and we were able to get access to it.
Well, actually, from what I understand, the back gate was open the entire time. The house is open. There's a sign on the back door saying restroom available. I mean, we have people walking in and out. So, I mean, it just seems to me that we ought to be able to get to these things more quickly. And I mean, I think the neighbors are really rightly concerned when these things aren't treated promptly. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. And thank you for getting this briefing together. It's something that I wanted to make sure the City Council got as much information as quick as they could. We weren't able to do it last Wednesday because we were still in the middle of things. And thank you, Council, for responding with this input because it makes us better as we start to put together the plan for the future. So that was the purpose of this. Just one man little anecdote, okay? I hope we don't have sprinklers on out there. We don't need sprinklers right now, okay? I turned my sprinklers off. We've had so much rain. Everybody, just turn off your sprinklers for a while, okay? And seriously, go over there. There's a little on-off switch, and I'm going to ask the CDC to look into this whole. I'm so proud that the city of Dallas went to 2-day a week, and I say this is an opportunity for the rest of the cities to think about, are we over-watering our lawns and creating breeding grounds for the birds that are coming from drought situations? I'm not a scientist, but there's some logic there. For me and my family, we turned it off, and I think we'll have a nice lawn for the next month. So let's think about that as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item, Mary.
We are beginning today the briefings that you had requested in your budget, request for budget briefings. We will have others on the 5th of September. And for those of you that had requests that were singular requests, you know, only one of you requested it, we'll be getting back with you individually to talk to you about some of those. A couple of the briefings will be in committees before then. I want to tell you one other thing about the process. By the end of this week, we will have done our final analysis of revenues, and you know, since our estimation of revenues, the last estimation that goes on to prepare the budget is in July, mid-July to the end of July. This last week, we like to give one more look and make sure that nothing, our projections are not lower than we thought they were going to be or higher than we thought we were going to be. There's usually a little bit of adjustment there. And so you can expect a memo at the end of this week that says, here's where we are. We've got a little less money than we thought we have. We've got a little more. And you can, if there happens to be a little more, we will ask you to work on your amendments should there be any and that sort of thing. I will tell you right now, if there is any more, it's not much. But I just wanted you to know that those will be out. That information will be out at the end of the week. We'll either have to cut or maybe you do some amendments. And you'll be able to see those things. And then on the 5th, we'll have the briefings on the rest of these agenda items and that you've requested. And that includes CIS. I'm sorry, I've lost my sheet of paper. BI, and there's one other one. No, there's another one of ours. Anyway, the request that you all put in, that a good number of you put in, will be briefed, and then we'll get with you, and individually you have some special items, and then some will go to public, to the different committees. So, and yes, that's going to public safety, and we'll be glad to have anybody visit at public safety. It's not on public safety, so that's one of the ones going to a committee. So. Ms. Jody?
Good morning. The water utilities budget is a pretty large operation. Esmeralda, if you're going to kind of keep up with me, I'm going to go to slide 4. I'll kind of walk through this fairly quickly. Again, we're a large operation. Most of you are familiar with that. There's a large number of staff involved in the delivery of service of over 2 million people. We serve a large service area, lots of infrastructure associated with that. A little bit of the overview on page 5. We have almost $4 billion in assets in operation. Again, we're infrastructure intensive, but most utilities are. We're no different than that. We use a financial management performance criteria to help guide utilities that have been in place for many years and serve, I think, the utility well. And again, we're a highly regulated operation by both the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, and the EPA. A little bit more about our assets. As you know, we have 7 reservoirs, almost 5,000 miles of main, 3 large water treatment plants on the water side, and then on slide 7, the wastewater assets, miles of pipelines to collect wastewater and then to treat. And I just want to make a side note. As part of this whole West Nile thing, we're paying attention as well. We're looking inward at our operations to make sure we're not doing anything to help promote that. Ms. Gretchen brought up a point about a leak issue, so I think that as we learn more about West Nile and how our operations may or may not impact that, we're focusing on that internally. It's not really a budget item, it's just a process review. Slide 8, a little bit of discussion about, again, our surface water that we have is owned by the state and appropriated to us to treat and sell to provide service to our customers. In the middle of that slide, again, we have a adequate supply for 2035. However, we're in the midst of a new regional planning process, and as part of that, we expect to bring a long-range, large-supply study contract to the council in September that will look at the future water supply sources such as Oklahoma, Toledo Bend, or replacement Lake Fassel, and others as we try to refine those options. Slide 9 gives you a snapshot of where our lakes are now. It's interesting, you know, this time last year the whole story was completely different. We're a little more than 10% depleted. Quite a bit of rainfall lately. Had heavy rainfall in the early part of the winter, which replenished our lakes. So from a water supply standpoint, we're in really good shape. The next slide gives you kind of an idea, just kind of a heartbeat chart that we use to kind of track demand. You can see in the early part of the season, the chart starts with October, under our budgeted amount, we implemented twice weekly watering on a permanent basis in April, and have seen great impact associated with that, both on our retail and our wholesale side. Both customer groups have actually reduced their water usage. And then here lately with the additional rainfall, you can see a huge drop on the far end there when we had quite a bit of rain starting about 3 weeks ago. So I think that, as you all know, that both weather and temperature affect our sales. A little bit of focus now on the 2013 budget, the proposed budget. Again, it's still focused on the infrastructure replacement. As you know, we're our self-supporting operation. And one of the most important things I think that we keep up with is our water and wastewater main replacement program. We're proactive on leak detection. In fact, some of those leaks we catch before they become breaks, which saves us money on repairs, keeps customers from being without water service for an extended period of time. So I think that those are big pluses. Slide 13 gives you an idea of the impact of our proposed budget. It's about $564 million in proposed expenses with a capital budget of $275 million. The overall revenue increase associated with that by group or by class, you can see on that slide, ranges from about 3.9% to up to 7.2%. It's about an average of a little over 5%. I think this budget does a couple things, among others. It continues our water conservation focus. We think that that's progress we've made over the last 10 years, and I think that traction continues for us. In addition, we're looking at future rate adjustments associated with infrastructure primarily. You see on the bottom of that page, in the manager's proposed budget, I think she presented about a 6.9% increase for next year. I believe you guys got a memo in your package this weekend that showed the savings associated with the bond refunding. So that bond refunding for next year is going to, for the 2014 forecast, has already reduced that rate increase substantially. So that, I think the bond sale rate was 2.66%. So we all have that, you know. Our debt is really good stuff. Another thing, just a side note, that about half of the cities that we serve are proposing rate increases for their customers. About half aren't. So they manage the rate changes and impacts in their cities a bit differently. Now, slide 14, again, you can see in the components, expect about 155 billion gallons of water treated and delivered. That is a forecast downward, both on water and wastewater, based on the trends that we've seen. Again, it reinforces the conservation programs that we've talked about over the last 12 months. And to that end, we think that this helps provide these services and sustainability focus for the utility. Again, on slide 15, our water system is built to meet this drought of record, but by the same token that we want to reduce the amount of water use and the amount of water loss through the programs we have in place. Major maintenance on slide 16, infrastructure rehab and rehabilitation, reuse and initiatives on 17, and then renewable energy initiatives are another part of the utility's focus. Lastly, the dividends for water conservation on slide 18 have really begun to take hold. I think that a lot of the demand changes are beginning to show up. I hate to say we've been successful because it's early, but I think we've been successful at seeing the customer's behavior react with us, and so we're very excited about that. That progress. A little bit more about the capital budget funding is a big part of our operation. We have about $275 million scheduled for this year. On slide 8, slide 20 gives you a little bit of a breakout of what we're spending those funds on, mostly in rehab and replacement. The growth portions are little bits of bites of that apple at a time, so to speak. So, again, as a reminder, we are an aged utility and having to meet those needs. The next few slides, starting with 21, really talk a little bit about how we calculate the retail rate requirements. You can see on slide 21, we needed about almost $23 million to balance our budget, and that's the rate increase that goes with what we've been speaking of. Slide 22 is a summary of the expenses. Get a little more about the retail rate impact. You've seen this in the manager's proposed budget incorporated in slide 24. So I'll just kind of wander through those quite quickly. Lastly, I think I'd like to focus on what the future holds for us. Again, continued focus on slide 27. Focus on water and wastewater system maintenance. We will see some increases in fuel and power. Who knows exactly where this next hurricane will drive gas prices, but I think we're going to be able to manage that pretty well as we move forward. The next couple of slides on slide 28, you see our probable capital improvement programs over the course of the next 4 years, that big bump out in FY17, primarily associated with our Elm Fork treatment plant, improvements in rehab there. Slide 29 summarizes the components of our future retail rate increases. As you can see there, O&M is but a small piece, capital funding, much larger piece. And then annually, about every other year, we expect some minor increases associated with the ongoing integrated pipeline projects we have with parent regions. So in summary, our proposal is a $564 million budget with a requirement of a 5.1% retail rate increase, which has a small impact on average. With that, Madam Manager, I'll turn it back to you and the Mayor. And there's appendix information for further reference, but I'll leave that to your review.
One of the things that I think is important in this briefing is when we project revenue, rate increases in the upcoming years, we're being conservative and based on the knowledge we have at that point in time. And as you can see, that really good interest rate on the debt helped a lot in the out years. That's about a 20% reduction in what we thought we'd have to be. So we're all along, we're looking at our expenses, our revenues, our debt costs, all our, you know, to be sure that we get that rate increase as compact as we can. So we've had some good results now, and we'll continue to do that as we go forward.
All right, any other questions, thoughts? No, we've got Mr. Allen.
Let's see, go to slide four. The this is really about our wholesale customers that we have, and so we have, 1.2 million wholesale customers, cities, I guess, in the cities, right? And then you have 23 cities, is that what it is, what you have?
Yes, sir. 23 wholesale treated water customers.
And then 11 of them we get the wastewater back. What happens to the other 12 cities that we do not get their wastewater? Where does it go?
It goes, mostly that goes to the Trinity River Authority facility, primarily at their central regional plant that's located at near Singleton and I-30. Most of it.
So it goes back to the Trinity River Authority. Do they put it in the Trinity River?
Yes, they treat it to the same regulations that we have, and they put it discharge it into the Trinity River.
And when you say put it back to the same regulations, which is basically, that's very, the water itself is cleaned and cleaner than the Trinity River water, and it goes into the Trinity, correct?
Yes, it's very clean.
And that, you know, and again, we've got 50 billion plus gallons of wastewater a year that we have. Is it required for us to put it back and allow it to go downstream, or can we do other things with that water?
We can do other things with that water. That's kind of a three-part answer to your question. When we receive it at the wastewater treatment plant, we're required to meet it to the permitted standard set by regulation. We have the Chapter 210 permit to directly reuse any of that water we choose to. When we're doing that at the Cedar Crest Golf Course and at Stevens Park and at Summit the Zoo. We also have a water rights permit that allows us to take that treated water and reuse it indirectly. We could augment lake yields, reservoir yields, by putting it back in the lake. And basically that increases the yield of the water rights there. So we have those three permits. The last part of your question is there's part of that water that has to stay in the river to maintain certain environmental flows. That's part of our, we call it our water reuse permit.
Is that where you're saying you have to have a percentage of the wastewater needs to go back into the Trinity?
Correct.
And then the other percentage, because I look at it a lot of times, just like a wood flow control.
No pun intended of flow.
But that's true, but it's the same thing. Wastewater, that's a 50-some-odd billion gallons is a lot of water. And it's good water that you clean with chemicals and get it cleaned back up. So, and again, ultimately, our citizens of Houston drink that water. So, and they're very proud of it. I mean, they're very appreciative of it.
Right. And to your point, the part of our long-range water supply study will look at refining how we can use that permitted reuse water back to augment our water supply.
Which almost build lakes if we had to.
It could avoid us building lakes too.
That's my point. So again, just council members, that's a lot of water and just something to kind of always have on your radar screen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. On slide five, Jody, could I get a copy of the 2010 Memorandum of Agreement and Contractual Agreement?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. 10:55, and meeting's adjourned. Thank you.